Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, you guys, welcome to this week's Temple of Hoop podcast. I'm your co-host, Coach Maples, Jay Mapes here, as always. Kings, what is going on? I know you are, Juice. I saw the last play of the Raiders game. Go ahead. Both our games ended in dramatic fashion. Yours ended on a happy note. So how's my guy doing?
That was the funniest.
I've never seen that
ending in a football game ever. I just couldn't help but laugh.
And the funniest thing is watching Bill Belichick. You can see it in his face. You can see the steam coming from his head.
He just had to walk off the field, right? You couldn't believe what he just saw. But shout out to the Raiders. Shout out to my goat, Messi. First World Cup.
Yeah, for sure.
Greatest ever. And that's it, man. Good day.
Here are resident degenerate stat correspondent, always. Jordan, what's going on, my guy?
Doing good. I'm surprised Kings is such a Messi fan, though, coming from Argentina. I mean, I thought that would be a country that you would absolutely hate.
Man, Messi's just too good, man.
The skill is too good.
Got to acknowledge greatness. We have a very, very special guest this week. As we told you, we're trying to get around the whole league. We like to invite guys from different fan bases, different teams. Yosef, you know him on NBA Twitter at Thunder Film Room. Yosef, what is going on? How are you? Welcome to the show, my guy.
What's up, y'all? I really appreciate you having me on. Excited to talk some Thunder hoops. As I told you in the DMs, really excited to talk about the Lakers, too. I feel like you're like the only like level-headed Laker fan on Twitter. The rest is just kind of unrealistic in my opinion.
Well, Kings keeps me balanced. You know, he lets me know as long as you got, you know, LeBron and AD, you do have at least a 10% shot. So we balance each other out, man. It's all love.
That much credit.
All right. Let's start off with your Thunder, man. Let's deep dive there. Right now they're 12-18, 23rd net rating, but they interest me. We were talking about this last week. This is why we reached out to you. They have 10 first round picks in the next three drafts. More going beyond that. A few players on this roster I'm very intrigued with. Just how are you taking this season? Me and Kings in the preseason thought that they would be one of the teams in the Wimby sweepstakes. They are actually rather competitive night to night. Very rarely getting blown off the floor. Competitive team. Have a burgeoning superstar, which we're going to get into in a minute. Just what are your, just as a fan, analyst of the team so far, what are your initial, you know, 30 games in? What is your take on the team so far, just in the grand scape of this season?
Yeah, as you said, competitive every night, which I think is something that has been a thing the past couple years. Past 2 years, they've been up there in terms of like most comebacks within like falling down from 15. So, one of those teams that like pretty annoying if you're a contender to play. I think you'd be expecting them to just quit and they don't. Excited. I think a lot of people came into the season with unrealistic expectations in terms of like year two leaps with like Josh Giddey or just expecting a lot of rookies to have an instant impact. And like, I think you guys would know, like as rookies, like very rarely have an impact on winning, especially on the defensive end, which like, I think after the first 10 games, we had like a top 10 defense, which obviously 10 games is a really small sample size, but they had a top 10 defense until February of last year. And then the defense has fallen off, which has kind of been a bummer for me. But other than that, it's really as expected. I think the biggest thing like I watch, and as you guys say, the 10 draft picks is like the lack of self-creation other than like the budding superstar you have. You lack spacing. You have guys who can't really create for themselves. And then when Shea's off the court, it's kind of just a cluster. Like guys are kind of lost out there. No big man as well, which in my opinion is like the sneakiest way of tanking. You already lack perimeter defense, so then you don't have a rim protector. You're playing Poku at the five most nights.
Open gym, baby.
Yeah, hey, it's, you know, guys are getting to the rack easily. You have one true point of attack defender in Lu Dort. So there's openings there. That's why I think on defense a lot of the time you see them over helping early rotation, stuff like that. And I think that's how they ended up having a top 10 defense early. Just guys, you know, like Shea was engaged early on, fell out of it, got back engaged, which that's really all I can ask for from him. He's been pretty checked out on the defensive end the last 2 years.
Yeah, me and Kings have both talked about this before on the pod. It's hard when you got to carry that amount of load offensively. It's very rare that you're going to be super engaged on the game. That's just the way the game is played. Your body just tires out. I don't care what good shape you're in. It's hard to do that for 36, 37 minutes a night. Just going deeper into this roster, you know, tell us. I see Chet. I really think Chet could have done well this year. They just would have let him play with the minute. Just the experience alone would have done wonders. So that was kind of sad to see that injury. But Chet, Giddey, Poku, Trey Mann, Jalen Williams, the one you drafted early. Got two Jalen, the one you got early. Who stays on this roster? And who do you want to stay? Who do you possibly want to upgrade? It just seems like it's like almost too much youth on the roster right now, if that makes sense. So where are you with the roster makeup, and what do you want to see happen next?
No, I agree with that. I was actually a opponent of like the whole like you can have too many, but you can have too many ball handlers. I didn't ever agree with that. Like I would say a year ago or so, especially because of the way they were using the G League, like sending guys down periodically, just like pretty much taking turns. But I do think like this year's kind of shown me that like yeah, you can have too many ball handlers, and there's gonna be guys whose like development gets hindered. And I know like at the end of the day, most organizations like are going to take as many swings as they can, so maybe they're not as much prioritizing like maximizing every guy's development. That's more of like pro player side, I guess. But like to me, it's more about like just seeing someone like Trey Mann, for instance, right now going through a shooting slump, and his game is so predicated on just the ball going in the basket, like.
Right.
Bag Twitter loves that guy, and I mean the space creation, the deceleration, it's special. But like that's a guy who just got sent down to, and he doesn't like, I think his assist ratio early in last year was like less than one to like two, I think.
Oh,
Like it
he's
was
definitely a
really
scorer
bad.
first. He's definitely a scorer
Yeah, oh,
first.
100%. He improved his finishing, which is fun. He's put on some muscle, which like you think, okay, maybe the muscle plays a part in that. I think the biggest thing for me is just finding guys who can kind of do it on both ends of the court. Because right now, like I've never been like overvalued defense, but like when you watch them, like for instance, Jalen Williams, the one we took early. I mean, you can be a liability as a rookie, but he just looks lost, whether it's as a point of attack or if it's team. And he has one of those problems that like a lot of jumbo creators have, you know, where they like can't drop their hips, like Giddey. Scotty Barnes kind of had as a two, where it's just these high hips where they're just getting burnt every time their handle's really high up. So like it's just one of those things. I think that's one thing like a lot of fans, especially when they started, like we got over 500 for the first time this year in 2 years. I think since like
Oh,
January
wow.
9th, 2020. And so like a lot of fans were like talking about playing and stuff like that. And I think that's just like you could probably, you know, push some of those 10 draft picks into like a wing. It's a wing league. You need a wing. But I just don't see a like a benefit to that at all. It's one of those things like, yeah, I this Thunder fans had this like phase where they sounded like Laker fans almost, where it's like you're wasting Shea's season, you know, where they're like you're wasting 38-year-old LeBron, you know, like you can't. And I get it, you can't waste like an all NBA season, but whenever like the guy tells you he's in, like he understands it. The Thunder have said it pretty much that they're waiting until the 2023 offseason to do anything because of the new CBA. So like I
Oh,
expected this
yeah.
season. Yeah, because like they got screwed over twice last time with the Rose rule, which prevented them from like wanting to pay Harden, and then the TV cap spike that got KD to Golden State. So like I can
Oh,
understand as to
wow.
why.
I forgot about all that. Wow. Yes,
Yeah,
you guys did. You
yeah.
guys were on the bad end of both those rule changes. Wow.
Yeah, that so that's like I understand it. I think there's a lot of impatience growing from fans and stuff like that. But like to me, this is a developmental year. The Chet stuff does suck because I think someone like Giddey, he can create for himself. His strength creation slightly getting there. But like he needs a role man or at least a pick and pop guy. And whenever like Poku setting you screens. And don't get me wrong, Chet isn't like a very good screener, but at least for him to be able to roll to the rim, his catch radius, there's just like, I genuinely do think like Giddey's development is being hindered there. And it's why he like, he really struggled in November and in October. But like, I do think they're heading the right way. My biggest thing just always comes back to like self-creation. They like really lack it. And like I noticed last year when I was watching the playoffs, when the game slows down, you need guys to be able to score for themselves. There just is not enough of that on the roster.
And I'll let Jordan go. I mean, I think to your point, the defense, what surprised me when Jordan told me to pay attention last year, Chet was way further along defensively than I thought. I thought he would have been a great help. And now he's an outstanding help defender. He just understands angles, how to use his length. So I think I'll let Jordan go like as far as that. But yeah, I think that's where you guys really miss Chet. He would have given some you know, defensive presence weak side at least.
He's almost one of the best like drop coverage defenders, like prospects I've ever seen.
All right, go ahead, Jordan.
I almost wore my Chet Holmgren jersey just for episode. Decided against it. But no, what I really wanted to ask you is because we were talking about the shot creation and how they were how they've like lacked that without SGA. Well, SGA doesn't play the other night and they blew Memphis out basically. I mean, they really controlled that game from front to back. And I do think that Trey Mann, you know, his like upside is definitely as a six man, in my opinion, like a guy that can come in and just give you buckets. Right. But where do you see this roster like going forward from here? Is SGA going to be a part of this roster in 2 years, or is he someone that they're going to flip for maybe a more established star potentially? Because before this offseason, I know when Jason Kings, myself, we talked about it on their last episode of Temple of Hoop last year. I said, if you're Boston, do you consider offering a trade of like Jaylen Brown for SGA, like a package centered around there? Obviously not a one-on-one flip, but what do you think?
I think Shea's like I had questions about if he could be the center stone of the franchise a year ago. I think he's like answered every question repeatedly, especially after All-Star break. I'll never forget, like I was sitting down with my buddy and I was like, I think like he makes himself untouchable in this run. And then he like goes and averages like 30 points the whole second half of the season. So I just don't see him getting moved. He's repeated multiple times that like he's understanding of the game plan. And obviously in 2 years, if you still like haven't made a playoffs and you weren't competitive, then like things can obviously change. I mean, 2 years is so like that's so long in the NBA.
And what I think is I think the play is right. If you're not a free agency destination, you got more picks than you could use coming up. Don't you flip those to bring the help in? That's what my like initial takeaway is, that plethora of picks. Like, you know, I think if Toronto continues to you know, go downhill, you can get an OG and an OB or something like that with some picks or whatever. Or just you can find a wing with those picks. And it's not a free agency destination. You gotta kind of – I think you do it kind of do it what New Orleans did. You just flip whatever you have to get assets and use that to get players, hopefully get them to commit after that, you know, after they get into your program. I think that's the way you have to do it if you're not a free agency destination.
But do not sleep on Santa Clara's own Jalen Williams. I'm telling you.
I like him.
No, yeah, he's his offensive creativity is fun. Sorry, go on, Kings.
Oh, no. I mean, Maples kind of touched on the head. That was what I'm going to ask. I mean, what's the plan with the picks? I mean, like, I kind of talked about in the last episode, because we had this discussion before and we had it on a timeline. Somebody said, you know, as much picks as you have, if a team gets the number one pick and the shot of Victor Wembanyama, they're not trading him for 10 first round picks. They're not doing it. You know what I mean? So it's like, at what point does the picks become a hindrance? Because it's like other teams know you can't use them all, and they know you have to get them off you because you can't use them all. So it's like, at what point does that leverage get used against you? And if you do want to trade those picks, like who do you target? And I think Maples had a good point when targeting guys like OG. But then when I think about that, it's like, man, now you kind of have to overpay for those guys. Cause it's like, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Cause it's like, you know, you're not going to be able to be in the running for like the big names like KD, you know, maybe, you know, if we get desperate in Minnesota and we want to reload our picks, maybe we'll trade Cap. But it's like, You know what I mean? It's just
he just wants OG in Minnesota.
Hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. I'm just saying, you know, it's just it's a short list, depending on what type of team you are. But you do have a lot of picks, so you can overpay for whoever you want. It's just yeah. So I mean, who would you target? And then what do you think the plan is with having all those picks if you don't get Wembanyama?
Can you repeat that? You just froze for like the last 20 seconds for me.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. No, my fault. I said, who would you target with all those first round picks? And then, you know, what would the plan be going forward if you, let's say, you don't get a Wembanyama or even a Scoot? What would your plan be going forward with all those picks?
Yeah, I think a Wembanyama and Scoot is like a very far fetched thing. Even though I've still held on to the hope of like being able to get top lottery odds, I think at the end of the day, the picks are really just there. The way I view picks is like money; they're assets. I think that's what like whenever people do crack the jokes about like, oh, the picks thing is getting ridiculous. Do we say it's ridiculous when people have too much money? Like that's what it is right now. It's compensation for true, what true. You want. Like they wanted Usman Jang at pick 11 this year. They paid three first rounders and they got him. You know, like that's you can go get your guys whenever you have those picks. Obviously, there's limits, as you said. Like, I mean, if I was a team, even if I was like, say, if I was Houston and I offered them Shea and every first round pick we have for Wemby, I still probably wouldn't do it just because it's just, you know, it's just that's an untradeable pick realistically. I do like how Maple said OG. I was thinking about OG earlier as well, because I think he probably costs you a lot less than someone like Pascal Siakam does. And also the thing with like teams knowing like you can't pick all these guys, to me, that's like on the team. Like say if someone offers you three first round picks, but we only offer you four, but you're like, we know Oklahoma City has more, we want more. That's just bad front office stuff. That's like right. San Antonio taking the Toronto deal.
Yeah, despite LA,
while yes, you can have bad blood, whatever. Whenever like you're not putting your franchise first, that's on you. And that like those are deals where like I'm cool with walking away or overpaying. I've always said, like, especially in drafts, like if you're going to overpay for a prospect, but you're getting your guy, then I could care less. Like they realistically overpaid for Poku. It was probably, he's probably a 1% chance of hitting, but he was their guy in the 2020 draft. So they got him. And that's perfectly fine to me.
Nice. I also think this draft is very deep with wings. And obviously that's like the Thunder's number one. The
wings are very nice. Are very good picks.
You probably get like a Brandon Miller in the middle of the lottery, Nick Young. I mean, Nick Smith, Anthony Black. I mean, there's a ton of guys in this draft that I think that obviously Sam Presti is one of the best analyzing talent. So I think that they could find him. I was really looking forward to Gideon Holmgren, man. I really was, because I think that would be an absolutely dynamic pick and roll, pick and pop duo. So I was kind of hurt. Do you think that there's any chance because you said that SGA is probably the franchise guy going forward. Do you think there's any chance that OKC moves off Josh Giddey?
I've been thinking about this a lot the past few weeks, because especially of how rough they started out. I think they're really bought into Josh, at least to the end of next season. And then obviously I don't think they'll make like a mistake Toronto does, where like you're in discussions to trade for a star, but you're like, oh, I'm not trading Scottie Barnes. I don't see that scenario happening. The biggest thing with Josh, it's his swing skill. It's so simple, but it's really the shot. No one's asking you to hit off the dribble hezzies, just a simple catch and shoot jumper. And there has been some improvement this year. He's up to like 32%. But obviously that's still a small sample size, and 32 isn't good, but compared to when you shot 26 the year prior, like I would take it. I was just wanting him to shoot 30 this season. And you know, so I do think there's maybe a chance one day, but I think right now they're very much sold on like the jumbo creators, long, lanky guys. The problem with Josh and Shea is like Josh is going to be that guy in the playoffs where you're hiding him in the corner on defense. His feel of the game makes up sometimes in terms of off ball defense, but like he'll never be a chaser, he'll never ever be a point of attack guy. Like that's going to be one of those things where like you really have to find a way to overcompensate. And that's why I liked when you said OG, because I really think, like, especially with someone like Chet, like I think if you can get two long, lanky point of attack wings, I think your team in terms of like starting five is set right there.
That's actually pretty interesting that you said, if you could, in my opinion, if Giddy can't be a plus on defense, you can't keep him because he can't shoot. So if he can't shoot and if he's not a plus defensively, you're not winning with that guy on the floor. You have to trade him. Like, you just have to trade him.
Yeah.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Let's moving on to Shai, burgeoning superstar, 31-6-5, 50-34-93 splits, 62 true shooting percentage. I went to a deep dive on his numbers. He's the 95th percentile as a pick and roll ball handler, 91st percentile in ISO, 85th percentile coming off dribble handoffs, per B-ball index. He's in the 100th percentile in playmaking talent, leads top of the NBA in drives per 24 possession, just insane rim pressure he puts on every night with no spacing, which was even more impressive to me. Man, I think we already touched on his timeline versus teams. You said he's bought in. I will take you at your word for that. I believe you. Just your take on the leaps he's made from last year to this year, and just, you know, where do you put him amongst the young guards? He's only 24, amazingly enough.
Yeah, I really liked a quote that Mark Daigneault said a few days ago, actually, and he was like, it's just he's getting more attention right now, and obviously more volume, but this is stuff that, like, the second CP got traded, it took probably 2 months into the 2020 season, where like he had one of the greatest, like statistically one of the greatest self-creation stretches we've ever seen in basketball. I say statistically because I think just saying the claim out there is a really bold claim. But I think it's always been there. The shooting has dropped off, but he's honestly one of the best drivers in the league, one of the best drivers we've seen in the past 10 years.
Top five in the league
for himself. It's ridiculous the way he creates angles, not only at the rim, but in terms of whenever he gets cut off, the way he can counter, his, just the way he knows where everyone is on the court at all times. And his biomechanics are ridiculous. His shins are going 90 degrees with the floor. It's hard for me to even grasp, elite deceleration, and just the way, I hate to use this term, but like the bag is just getting deeper. Like the other night he's hitting these like behind, like back turn fadeaway jumpers, and it's just like, all right, the real last final step here is the three ball. And I was very a strong proponent of like it going back up this season because it dropped off last year. I was like, there's 3 years of data that supports him being a good shooter. He's probably not he shot 41 during the no fan season. He's obviously not that high, but like he's gonna be league average, and obviously that struggled. But he's almost completely, before these past few games, he almost completely took the three ball out of his game. It was almost DeMar DeRozan-esque, where he was just getting all of his buckets in the paint, in the mid range. And he's gotten himself to become a little foul merchant, which, you know, years of going against Harden, you know, I've hated. But as my buddy tweeted the other day, like, hey, if you don't want him to get to the line, stop fouling him, right? That's what Rockets fans said for years. Hey, like, I mean, I'm gonna pick the line.
So it wasn't even Thunder fans. It was Canadian basketball fans, Canadian basketball Twitter. I was like, man, SGA getting this superstar whistle out the blue is killing me, because it was against the Pelicans. I was like, man, they keep calling everything on this dude. They actually called the charge at the end that sealed the game that night, if you remember. But, man, I got attacked by a bunch of Canadian basketball fans. Like, come stuff out of here.
No, hey, the Canadians are crazy about Shai. Like, you want to talk about an arch enemy of, like, Thunder fan base is, like, Canadian and Raptor fans.
They want him in Toronto. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's like, It's
Jason, you should bring that up because last week we were discussing this and Jason said, you know, there's no secret that obviously Toronto wants Shea.
Yeah. And
you're saying that Shea wants to go back home.
See, I don't know if it's confirmed Shea wants to go back home.
I just heard rumblings, but yeah, I think he's I mean, you said he's bought in. You're the OKC guy. You're telling us.
Hey, I've also said to people who like say, oh, Shea to Toronto, all right, give me Scotty Barnes, give me all the draft picks. Like, if we want to talk, let's talk, you know, like Rocket, let's
make a deal.
Hey, like Raptor fans will like be in my mentions posting like OG and like two first rounders, and they're even then they're like, oh, we're overpaying. I'm like, get out of here, dog. Like, I want the picks for the next decade. All right.
Raptor fans been obsessed with trying to fleece people. They couldn't even fleece Pelinka. They need to just give that up, bro.
Right.
They did fleece the Spurs though.
Right. Man.
they've been trying to hit another league since and they haven't hit it. Like, they just need to give it up, bro. Like, that was just out of spite.
So real quick, I gotta ask you, Yosef. So I took a lot of flack because during the draft, I remember Trae Young was the darling. And I saw Shea in a tournament and I was like, I think I like him long term. I like big guards. I'm not a fan of small guards. I was like, I think I like him as the best guard in this draft class. And you know, Trae got a little bit of a cult following. They're like, no way. But I think the gap is closing, if not even at this point. But where would you rank Shea right now amongst the young guards? Like, he's only 24. Where would you rank him in that, you know, that Ja, Trae kind of conversation, guys in the early, mid-20s? Where would you have him?
I often say, like, I go off the now and I don't hold, like, a year and a half to, like, this guy's, like, current talking. But, like, I do think what Trae did 2 years ago in the playoffs matters.
That's fair. So, like, I respect that.
Trae, Shea, and Ja in the same tier. And I get people will be mad that, like, Shea hasn't been in the playoffs. Well, he has been in the playoffs, but not as the guy.
Right.
But I do think, like, there's 3 years now of data that, like, supports that Shea is a dude. And, like, it's hard for me to hold against him the team's greater aspirations. Because, like, I tell people all the time, could they go and make a move to get to the first round? Yes, you have all the draft capital in the world. You have all the prospects in the world. And then what happens? Shea asks out in 2 years. It's Utah all over again, you know? And that's what, like, my biggest thing is with people with this whole, like, tanking thing and whatever. It's like, it's a lose-lose situation either way. Like, I don't enjoy watching this basketball, right? But, like, it's better than a first-round elimination every year. And, like, I'm very big believer, and it's a wings league. And while I do – and, like, there have been some exceptions to that rule, like Steph last year, I do think it's hard to, like, put Shea with a bunch of role players and fully expect him to
– I don't even think it's an exception because they don't win that championship without Wiggins. So I don't even think it's an exception. You got to have – you got to have
Wiggins. That's true. That's true.
I wanted to bring up something about Shea since we're on that topic because I had two things to bring up because Shea was one of those guys where, you know, when he had that crazy shooting season and then I told people to slow down, he's not shooting like that ever again. He's nice. I like Shea. He's nice, but he's not shooting like that ever again. That's when I realized he had a cult because I swear I had like 30 quotes.
Canadian
like Shea fans. I'm like, bro, when did he get this type of fan base, bro? Like, I'm not even saying he's not good. And people are mad because I wasn't calling him a top 20 player in the league. It's absolutely ridiculous. But his growth has been fantastic. And, you know, it's just funny because when the Clippers made that trade, Maples is my witness. The Clippers made that
trade. We're getting good.
And I said, they're going to regret this in 3 years because I told Maples, Shea's going to be as good as Paul George in like 3 years. I literally told Maples that the day they trade, I'm like, that gap is going to close faster than what people think. And this trade will be awful in like 3 years. And fast forward, here we are. The trade is awful. Shea's
the only – the King's 100% right. The only bill I posted is – It's like you traded for Kawhi too, because Kawhi said he wasn't.
Yeah, of course. That was your only bail.
Also shows that superstar players should not, with the exception of LeBron when he was in Cleveland, should not be GMs.
Facts.
All right.
No, I genuinely believe that trade may go down as like. I said it a few days after it happened. Like, it could go down as one of the greatest trades of all time in terms of OKC. Like, you could. Jalen Williams and Trey Mann even hit, like, all you needed was one draft pick to hit, right? You had Shea hit. So if you even get one draft pick to hit, I mean, Clippers fans can – you want to talk about a cult following. I mean, those fans are crazy, all right? Like, I don't tweet out no bait, but, like, there's an OKC reporter who, like, will tweet stuff out, and, like, the death threats go crazy with them. Like, it's nuts.
Oh, that's nuts. Clipper
Daryl got burner accounts?
I had one more other thing too, and this kind of goes with the second year players, the young player talk, because we had a nice spaces, I think, a couple years before the draft, before the K draft, and there is discussion, and it was, would you trade SGA in the fourth round pick for the fourth overall pick as OKC? Would you, or the Pistons? Would you trade your shot at K for SGA in the fourth pick? And so many people were against it. I remember I was like, you know, it's enticing, but I don't think I'd do it. And then a lot of people, I think Trev and some folks from the league was like, no, you should do that. SGA in the fourth, like, you know what I mean? That's good deal, good value. And it's just like looking again with what SGA has become, I think there's just been a theme where I just think a lot of people just underestimated SGA. Like they just did not, like the physical attributes was there. The talent was there. I just think a lot of people just did not think he could put it together. You know, just how has it been watching that, watching him just excel and just develop this fast? Because I just think in a lot of people's minds, they're just like, it's shy, him being this good. Nah. You know what I mean? Like,
what happens when you play for Calipari?
That's true.
Yeah. It's honestly one of the cooler like player development stories that I've seen in a while. Like I was watching his Kentucky tape a few weeks ago, and it's like I couldn't have told you like that he would turn into this player. Or even if you watch his playoff series against Houston from 2 years ago, like you could clearly see that like he wasn't ready, but like there were the fundamentals were there, as you said, like the physical attributes. He was still a crafty finisher. I think the biggest thing has been just the ability to get like he had a two-shot motion. He had a big hitch. He kind of removed it before the bubble. And then since then, it's pretty much all gone. And that's really helped him in terms of his pull-up game and the way he's just able to shoot over guys. The deceleration, the ball handle, honestly, that thing in terms of from year one until just year two, the way he was able to improve on that end. And I think that's where, you know, his deceleration really like puts defenders at a bad position because he can take you to the rack.
Yeah, I think outside of Kyrie, he has the best change of pace dribble in the NBA. And I think that's what makes it, because he's not overly like, wow, his first step is just, no, it's the herky-jerky, the change of direction. I can stop and go on a dime. That's what it is. And I think outside of Kyrie, he's probably the best at that. Like, you get guys like that Ja Morant, just, I'm going to get to gear five, and there's nothing you can do about it. But I think Shea's more so just stop, go, cross in and out. I'm going to go slow. Then I'm going to go fast. And it just frozen. And then, you know, well, you got to foul him, right? Gets a whole bunch of free throws per game because you can't stay in front of him. Let's move on to the Lakers. Some very troubling news. A former OKC legend now plays for the Lakers. Shout out, Yosef. He's here. He's going to give us his take on that as well. Unfortunately, this really sucks. AD out for at least a month. We got three differing timelines between Shams, Woj, and Trevor Lame. One said indefinitely, one said a month, one said 3 to 4 weeks. I don't know, but, you know, for the next few weeks at least, no Anthony Davis for the Lakers. It sucks because he was having an absolute career year. 27-12, two blocks, career high, 66% true shooting. Two-way menace was holding the Lakers down. They were starting to kind of shift the ship into the right direction. Kings, I'll start with you here. Just what does this mean for the Lakers, and what should they do next? In your opinion, given that they don't have their pick next year, so or don't have control of their pick, excuse me. They have a pick. It's just we don't know if it's going to be theirs or New Orleans, depending on the finish. What do you think? What does this mean for the Lakers, and how should Pelinka respond from a roster building standpoint?
It's the crossroads,
man.
it's the crossroads because you cannot afford to be a lottery team and New Orleans gets that pick. That will be absolute disaster. It will be absolute disaster if you get a pick that has Scoot Henderson or Victor Wembanyama and New Orleans gets that pick. there's no bouncing back from that. There's no bouncing back from that. You will catch hell from everybody, your fan base, the media, you know, all the talking heads and from every single top sports show. Like, it's just bad. And then the players will turn on. Like, they will turn on you in that situation because you left them out there to lose and they got nothing from it. And they put their bodies on the line, play all these minutes, did all this stuff, and they got nothing from it. Like, you can't have that. Like, I don't care how broke they are. If that happens, your franchise might really just go south for the next foreseeable future. So with that being said, there's some news about Chicago trying to sell. There's some news about other people trying to sell. At this point, if you are committed to Anthony Davis, his prime, you have to commit to that. Like, it's just, you just have to commit. You don't have max space for a star. So really, your only chance to get a good player to maximize Anthony Davis is to trade for one now. That's really it. That's really the only chance you have. You don't have cap space for a max star. I repeat, you do not have cap space for a max star. The only chance you would get one is if by some miraculous thing, Kyrie Irving's walked and he signs for less than the max cap space in free agency. That's like literally your only chance. You know how just unlikely that is at this point in time, like for us to even utter that as like a likely scenario. Like, you can't even think about that as an actual free agent. Like, that can't even be a plausible situation for you. So with that said, like, your best shot is to trade for that guy, like, now. Like, if you want to build around Anthony Davis, you have to get him now. Like, there's just no other way, because if you don't get him, you keep losing, you're done. You're done for the next 4 years, bro. Like, I'm sorry, you're done. If you lose that draft pick, and there's a lottery pick in New Orleans, you lose that draft pick, it is done. You've lost your locker room. You've lost your assets. You've just given your another Western Conference team that's already on the up another elite premier talent, so you'll never catch them. Like, you're just done. So they have to make the decision now. Like, they really just have to make a decision right now.
Jordan, go ahead, bro.
I mean, I agree with what Kings is saying, but I mean, like, what are you going to get from the Bulls? Like, they're going to trade you DeMar DeRozan, but he doesn't make you better, in my opinion, right now, because he doesn't fill any gaps that they already have issues in, you know what I mean? So we've talked about this, you know, over and over again. I don't know what the move to make is. Like, Miles Turner is probably the best decision, but is Indiana willing to move off him at this point? I don't think so. So I don't know where you go. Bradley Beal? Like, is Washington willing to move Bradley Beal? Because I saw a lot of Wizards fans today when he was questionable talking about, like, does this guy even want to play basketball at this point anymore? So maybe Washington will be willing to move, you know, Bradley Beal, because I mean, they're obviously, Washington's in a lot of turmoil, dude. They just lost to a Lakers team without Anthony Davis.
10 L's in a row.
Yeah, they're not good. You know what I mean? So maybe they're willing to trade a Bradley Beal. And like, normally I would be like, is Bradley Beal like that much of a game changer? Yeah, he's a great scorer. He could fill it up, but you know, he doesn't give you much on the defensive end. But you know, playing next to LeBron,
I was about to say, yeah,
that could. That's a nice
he started his career as a good defender, so it's not like he doesn't have it in him. You know what I mean?
We just talked about Shea, that scoring load. It takes away from the defensive end, man. It really does. Yosef, go ahead. Your unbiased view of what the Lakers' move should be right now. Just what does this Anthony Davis extended absence mean?
I just don't see a scenario where, like, your ceiling isn't this 8-7 seed. And like, for me, and I agree with Kings in terms of, like, when you have LeBron, especially when you have Bron, but when you have AD too, you have a 5-10% chance. Like, you can catch hot whenever. But I just don't think organizations run the way fans think they run in terms of, like, just punting this future. And like, giving up a 2027 and 2029 first round pick when realistically the Lakers are going to be probably not good then. You're going to have an aging Anthony Davis if he doesn't ask out. And so, like, I think you have to find smaller trades around the works, like, make it work. Like, the Pat Bev and Kendrick Nunn deal, and then, like, maybe sending out one pick. I just don't think, like, sending both picks unprotected is, like, a smart organizational choice. Like, I think that's what happens, like, whenever you become, like, the Nets and Celtics deal a few years ago, where, like, the Celtics just won big, you know?
The Lakers are desperate.
Like,
They're absolutely desperate.
Oh, they are. But the thing is, the Lakers, like, fundamentally, they're not, like, and I hate to say this because, like, I grew up a Kobe fan and, like, the Lakers, like, probably my second favorite team. But, like, it's not a good run, like, good ran organization.
Oh, trust
like,
me. They, me and Kings know that.
You know, they no pro scouting team. Like,
that
is, you're,
it, bro, it, do you, did you, I read it, that list past week. No pro scouting team. Do you know how it, unreal that is?
Actually, they do have one. It's LeBron. All right, it's Braun. Okay, that's what it is right now. And like I get the org standpoint where it's like, okay, Braun and AD made this rust trade, so like you got to figure it out. But like there is no figuring it out because number one, like when you have that much money held up to those three, especially when one of them is a complete drop off than the other two, like there are guys who play on the Lakers that they wouldn't touch the court on the Thunder. Like, and I say that confidently. I watch Kendrick
Nunn.
Which is
why I keep telling people
like,
to stop getting on Ham. Like, please talk to them.
Well, also with Ham, like, people forget coaching isn't just X's and O's, especially in the NBA. Like, it's very much like controlling attitudes and controlling egos. And like, that is just as much of that as it is. Like, look at Steve Kerr. Like, are we like, Steve Kerr is a great coach, but the way he's able to like control the egos, everyone's getting theirs, whatever, like, and it works out. And I hate to say that, not a Steve Kerr.
Their stars also makes it a little easier.
Yeah, your stars help. And like, it's just not a good situation in LA. And like, I know it's one of those situations where, like, we can't burn the, like, the good year of LeBron before he's done. And like, AD's playing well. And I've been really critical of AD in the past. But it's just one of those things where it's like, do you really, are you going to ship your whole future for what, a 6-7 seed and then maybe reach the second round? Like, that means you have to go the whole playoffs with half court creation. Like, it's going to be Braun 2018. What was it, 2017? His last year with the Cavs. Like, if they make a
last
run,
two.
That's all. Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's all it will be. And it's just one of those things where, like, I understand fans think, like, we're LA and, like, there will be players to come to LA. But, like, the last time it happened, it took the greatest player, in my opinion, the greatest player of all time to, like,
yeah,
walk
yeah,
through
I,
the
I think
doors.
People forget Kobe's last 2 years when he signed the post-Achilles deal, they had the most cap room in the NBA, and they still couldn't get anybody. So I don't think people understand, like, if Jerry West is not there, like, that changes the dynamic. Pelinka and Genie don't have the same pull as the Jerry tandem do, or Jerry Tanner did. Excuse me. Rest in peace to
the only time, and the only reason why they get guys now is because clutch.
Right. That's what they like. I think at 70-80% of the roster is clutch clients. Right. So people talking about, you know, making the clutch jokes, like, what would the roster be without him?
You can say, yeah, because that's who won them the championship.
It's, there's no Lonnie, who's been a godsend. You know what I mean? So that's kind of is what it is, man.
I don't mean it, but I think at the end of the day, as far as the Lakers are concerned this year, I think the most important thing to them is having LeBron in the Lakers jersey breaking Kareem's record.
You might be right.
It's the tickets, man.
That's, yes. Yeah, marketing, money.
Once you get down to that point where he's like, next game could break it, I mean, that's all eyes are on you.
Right. It's really unfortunate, man. For LeBron to still be, and he's still at least top 10 player in the way AD was playing, just that roster, and none of us 100% know. He may have had a hand in the Westbrook trade. We see both camps have people put out opposing reports about who did what in that ordeal, but it's just unfortunate that for him to still be this productive, to not be on a team with a shot at it. You know what I mean? You hate to see a legend, you know, go out this way. You honestly do. Whatever side of the LeBron fan spectrum that you're on, it's never good to see a legend go out this way.
And the front office is contributing to that. I just can't help but think that this is just a bad image just for them going forward.
It is.
There's no way stars right now are looking at how they're operating and thinking that's good. You know
that's
what I mean?
LeBron. Like, that's LeBron's mark. LeBron is a lot of guys' favorite player.
Like that's what I'm saying. Like, that's an icon to so many guys, and to for them to see how they're like doing him, like just throwing him to the wolves, like that's not going to resonate with people.
That's why like ownership is the greatest competitive like advantage in the league. And it's like similar to what KD said about the Nets a few years ago, or not Nets, about the Knicks a few years ago. Like, all these old people love the Knicks, right? They talk about New York, Madison Square Garden. None of these current generation players give a shit about that. True. Care about the Knicks. Like, yes, Madison Square Garden is somewhere you want to play, right? But like, other than that, like, no one cares about the Knicks. They're more of a laughing stock.
They all want to play at Madison Square Garden, but don't want to play for the Knicks.
No, exactly. And like, don't get me wrong, there's still like that Laker gold has like meaning to it, right? And that matters. But whenever you see how the organization is ran, like, why wouldn't you just want to play for the Clippers? You're still in the same city. I get it. It doesn't have the that it factor, you know. But at the end of the day, like, that it factor only matters to a certain amount of actual guys, well, right? Well, like, Bron would never go to the Clippers.
Well, I'll say this, you know, and again, as I just mentioned, it could be changing. It will change because the bust in West Ham isn't there. But going back to, like, the 60s, you know, they win, like, two championships a decade, like, at minimum, you know. So, like, there's some consistency. There's a history you can lean on there. And even recently, you know what I mean? Like 12 years ago, Kobe Bryant won a championship there. LeBron follows it up 10 years later. Like, they get one a decade. You know, a lot of franchises can't say that. And but like that's, I said,
generational fans too.
Yeah. West, yeah. Bus and West are not there. And that's what scares me, because you got Linka and Genie trying to, you know, spearhead the organization, and they're being consulted by
Kurt Rambis.
And then, you know, Genie, after we, you know, and if Kurt Rambis was good in his stint at basketball operations and coaching, I wouldn't say anything. But you had a guy who was not good in that role when it was officially his in his other two stops. And then you're leaning on him now for, like, serious basketball, you know, the decisions. So I think, you know, I'm like Kings, man. I'm worried. I think he made a great point about, you know, other stars see this. Like, what are you willing to do to put me in the best position to win? You know, you can't do it for LeBron. Is this really the best place for me? And on top of that, I'll say this. I'm not gonna say dumb. I think sports fans are generally smart, just very emotional. You have a fan base that's very surface dwelling. Like, I think the biggest pet peeve for me right now, I don't even tweet during weekdays anymore on Laker games, because as soon as I go on there, everybody's talking about what Darvin Ham isn't doing. About every game, every quarter, every game, bro. I'm like, bro,
it's our first year coach, bro. Hasn't even made it to, like, January.
In every line, I was like, talk about the lineups. Like, do the Lakers have five players that you would like?
He played everybody who they wanted to play, and they still lost. they got tired. Yeah, there's no, and then they play Christie right now, and Christie's having a pretty decent stretch. But what happens when that rookie wall inevitably hits?
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's like
Christie starts playing bad. Like, bro, this is like, I don't even want
to. Yeah, that's why it's just very surface. On top of that, you know, Laker fans like are very surface. Like, they look on the surface. So a lot of players get the blame when they shouldn't. Coaches get the blame when they shouldn't. Like, Malinka and Ginny, like, are just really running around like Teflon. So that, you know, that's the other thing.
Sparks.
All right.
It's ran like a mom and pop shop.
Right. That's what it is. It is. It's a family business. Shop, shop. So the other thing on the back of talking about AD missing a month, 2 days ago, a stat came to my attention I want to ask you guys about. I think this will definitely interest Jordan, because, you know, he's big on the gambling part, and this is a big factor. So as of 2 days ago, there were 427 NBA games played, and only 92 have featured both teams playing their top three players. That's 22%. That is crazy to me from just a fan attendance standpoint, a gambling standpoint, which the NBA is reportedly trying to lean all the way into. You guys think this is a big issue? Like, that's a lot. That's a big – 73% of your games are being played without one of the top six players at least, you know, not playing. Is this a problem for the league? I'll start with Jordan, because, you know, you're the gambling guy. You play a lot of parlays.
No parlays.
I'm sorry. You gamble a lot. Sorry. So is this a problem to you? And then what do you think they should do to fix it?
Well, I don't think it's a problem if it's reported correctly.
Okay, because that's fair.
Information is your best key as a gambler, right? So okay. If we're all given the same amount of information, then it makes it equal.
Okay.
With that being said, I mean, there's times over the last 3 years where, like, the Clippers, prime example, where it's like 15 minutes before tip-off, it's like, Kawhi's not playing due to knee soreness. Like 15 minutes before tip-off? Like, what are we doing here? Why is it that soon? Like, there needs to be a rule like the NFL where you come out with an injury report, right? And obviously, I know the NBA's played in a shorter period, right? Every day. So there needs to be some sort of rule where it's like, come out with an injury report in the morning. These people are questionable, right? 2 hours later, update after shoot around. Now they're doubtful. They're questionable. Game time decision. And then the game time decision has to be an hour before. Either you're playing or you're not playing. And the NBA does have to do this from a logistical standpoint from gambling, because gambling is the future of the NBA.
Yes. Adam Silver's already said he wants to lean into it all the way. He said he wants to like, it's a thing. He wants to go.
A prime example is today, Miles Sanders, he tweets out after the game, like, I don't care about your fantasy numbers or your tickets, dude. Those actually pay your contract, because everybody watching those games is watching them because of gambling and fantasy. You know what I mean? Like, they go hand in hand at this point, right? So they do need to compensate us people wagering on these games. We're wagering real US dollars, right? So we need to have the up-to-date information. But I don't think it, from a fan standpoint, I think it sucks, dude.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a family and you could take your kid to one, and Jason, you're a father like I am, you take your kid to one game a year, and you take him to that game and Giannis sits out, dude, I'd be so pissed, bro. You know,
man. So look, I'm supposed to go to New Orleans next year, and I'm like, I'm scared to buy Pelican tickets because my favorite player is made of glass.
That's not his fault, dude.
I mean, I'm not. That was not his fault. A lot of his stuff is not. But if you're frail, you're frail. You know what I mean? It's not like some players are just more frail than others.
Right.
Well, I don't even know if I want to buy the Pelicans tickets because I'm like,
well, some teams just resting guys. That's a little much.
Yeah.
In the terms of the fan.
Yeah. Kings, what do you think, bro, about all the heavy, you know, game missing, resting / injuries?
Yeah, man, it's just a different league at this point.
That's fair.
The spacing is just too spaced out. Guys are just too good at shooting. You just have to cover more ground in today's NBA. That's why the defense is just so tough to play now. A lot of people don't understand. Like, back then, they played tougher defense. They're allowed to be more physical, but these guys just weren't that good at shooting. So it's like, you can just leave guys open. Not leave guys open. You can just, like, cover guys a certain way, and they just wouldn't hurt you from the three-point line because they just weren't that good at shooting. Now it's like
– Or they wouldn't just take
you. Right. Or they wouldn't even take them. Like, now it's like, if you, like, do a closeout, but it's not, like – if you're not taking away his space and that guy's a good 3-point shooter, it's going in. Like, it's like you can't just close out with the hand up slowing down. Like, you have to take his space away or that three is going in. It's just a way different game. So that amount of space you have to cover, also the pace being higher, so you're running more, it's just more taxing now to defend. And then, you know, I mean, so, and then you have on offense, you know, you're playing faster as well. Yourself, so you're also playing faster offense, so it's like you're using more energy on offense and you're also having to cover more space on defense. It's just the wear and tear on the body, even though it's a less physical game, at the end of the day, the actual workload on the legs is just going sideways, laterals, fast. Like, that matters more. Like, the thing is that at the casual fan or the old school fan, like, they're too caught up on like the flash. It's like with boxing, you know, they care so much about the heavyweight knockout, you know, the brawler. But it's like, the thing that's the most tough and the most difficult is the guy who's well-conditioned, the Floyds, the tactical point here, point there, like, just wear you down. And that's just how the game is now. Like, it just wears you down over the course. So that's why, you know, you have to take the load managements. You have to make sure everybody's shape. That's why they don't practice as much. You know what I mean? They don't really practice as much because, like, it's so much energy you spend during the games now. It's like you want to just keep yourself able to get through the whole season. So it's, yeah, man, it's tough.
Yosef, go for it, bro.
Yeah, man, I think I agree with what both of you said. I think it's also just the regular season just doesn't matter as much anymore. I think we saw that with, like, the old Spurs teams and Braun finally being able to rest after, like, I think really that Greg Popovich, like, as the big three in the Spurs started aging when they started resting guys. Like, that's when it really, I feel like, became popular. It's just one of those things, like, it is a problem for the NBA, but it's also, like, those 82 games, like, that's the TV deal. Like, that's what gets these guys these big contracts. So they got to make these, like, they have to do it. So I think maybe, like, being able to incentivize guys as well, like, all right, play 70 games, here's a contract bonus, something like that. But, and also, I know, like, I used to love back-to-backs when I was younger, but, like, in reality, back-to-back should not be happening.
I have no idea why it's still a thing.
Yosef, that's a great point that you hit on about.
Yeah, like, guys, they're landing in at, like, 8 a.m. somewhere. What's up? I'm freezing.
That's all good.
That's a great point that you hit on with the back-to-backs and too many games, because, like, the NBA is trying to, like, incentivize the regular season, but they're doing it in all the wrong ways. Like, they're naming regular season trophies after guys to try and make it better. Giving out a regular season trophy. Like, dude, nobody cares about that. At the end of the day, it's like, if you want to make your regular season meaningful, just cut games. Make it 62 games. But obviously, we know that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's the most direct solution. But I think me and King's like, that's like, at that case, it's like putting toothpaste back in the tube. It's just not going to happen. Too much money. There's too much money at stake.
But we would all agree that it would help the game.
Yeah, it'd be it's less games, so it's less wear and tear. Like King said, the way the game's played, super fast, guys are flying up and down, have taken up more space, traveling much more space during the course of a game than they did ever in NBA history. And secondly, the games are more important. You know what I mean? So everything matters now. There's less games to try to make up this playoff gap. I'm five games behind. I got to play now. I can't sit. So I think that's what, you know, taking games away would do, but it just won't happen. It's just too much money. That's Yosef mentioned all the TV contracts and the CBA. There's no way they're cutting games back.
Yep.
Yeah. Nope. Moving on, final topic. We joked about this in the chat, Jordan and Kings. Also, we have somebody who used to have to root, not have to, used to root for this guy, James Harden, in a lengthy interview, said he won his damn respect, says that he changed basketball and the way it's played. Yosef, I'll start with you. He is a former Thunder. You had the original young big three. By the way, it still shocked me to this day. If you told me 10 years after that group formed, they'd never get a title together, I would have been like, you're crazy. They at least get one. That's like one of the biggest what-ifs in NBA history, or didn't get their disappointments in NBA history. What is your reaction on James Harden saying that? Do you think it's true? And just how do you feel about what he said?
I think James is one of the best, like, ISO players the league has ever seen. Do I think, like, he's actually changed the game of basketball? I don't know if I would go that far. I think he changed what we think of when we, like, talk about heliocentric basketball. I mean, he was, like, heliocentric to the max.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, like, I kind of, like, it was a good PR piece. Like, I've been pretty critical of James Harden throughout his career, and, like, I felt bad reading it. I was like, damn, like, we really don't appreciate this guy a ton, like, as we should. And I think some of that is kind of on him. Like, one of my biggest, like, critiques has always been, I've never felt like James, like, emptied the bag. Like, he never went out firing. It was always, like, two attempts in the fourth quarter, something like that. Do I think he's changed his game? I don't know if I'd go that far. I think he's still the same great playmaker he's always been. He's just doing it a little more now and shooting a little less. And he honestly has, like, a perfect game to age well. The hammy has finally healed up and he's looking good. But yeah, it's just one of those things that, like, it's a shame, but I wouldn't go as far as, like, him claiming that, like, he's changed the game of basketball. There's only a few guys I think ever who's really done that. And he's an all-time great, but I just wouldn't go that far.
Jordan?
I think he's absolutely changed the game of basketball, and I don't mean that in a good way at all. You know, he's made the game a little bit more ISO, obviously, and you know, guys like Trey Young, you see a lot of foul merchants out there that are guys just to get to the foul line more than they are to do anything else, and that's always been James Harden's problem. Once we go to the playoffs and there's less fouls called, he's always struggled. You know what I mean? And you know, not to take away anything from Trey because he had a great playoff run in 2020, but you know, we have seen a lot of guys kind of implement that style of James Harden, and it's tough to watch, dude. To be honest, it's hard to watch as a basketball fan.
Kings,
yeah, for me it was definitely the heliocentric style of play. Was definitely implemented to the max with certain guys because certain GMs saw that if they built their roster a certain way around a certain talent, they could maximize it, and they could be competitive, so they can get the playoff, the playoff deals, the playoff money, be quasi competitive for a chip, you know, appease the fan base and be able to save money, right? Because you poured into these analytics, you've got this heliocentric star, and you got these cheap, affordable role players that you can be a competitive team with, even though you didn't invest all the way to go all the way. And then certain type of play styles, like you said, the foul baiting, just the way he was hooking people's arms, really bending the rules. Guys were doing that because they saw how effective he was. I mean, the dude averaged like 30 plus something for like how many years straight? Like, you don't see it as another guy trying to earn money, trying to be a max player. There's no way you looked at that and was like, man, I'm not going to do this. No, you're like, if he's doing it, he's successful. I need to do it too so I can get my numbers up just like him. And then, you know, one of the patented moves he did have, you know, obviously there are step backs before him, but just his step version of it, guys start implementing a lot because, you know, for a long time when he started using it, everybody was like, is that a travel? Then before the breakdown, it wasn't a travel. Then next thing you know, everybody else started doing it because, you know, it helped create space. But like Jordan said, is it a good change? Because I hated watching the James Harden Rockets play. I absolutely hated watching. I would never try to go out of my way to watch the Rockets play. And any team that played like the Rockets, I just never liked to watch play. And a lot of people felt the same way. So, yeah, it was effective. Yeah, you know, it worked more times than not. But it was just not fun to watch because, like, he made Hoop his own version of a math game. Like, the Jazz made Hoop with Rudy and Donovan Mitchell a math game with the threes they got up. James Harden made it a math game with the amount of shots he could get from the three-point line, in the paint, and from the free throw line. It's like, if I get up this amount of shots, if I, you know, get this amount of assists, and my teammates take this amount of threes from me, like, we'll be able to score this much and be able to win this amount of games or be in this game, et cetera. You know, it just made it a math problem that, you know, he played to that equation. So it's just redundant play style, horrible on the eyes, very small variation. And yeah, I mean, when people feel like that. So it's like, yeah, you say, you know, I changed the game. And like, a lot of people are in the comments like, yeah, you did. not the way we wanted it to be, though. So that's why, you know, a lot of people don't like it. You know,
I love math, Kings. I don't think he's thinking about math.
His GM was thinking about math. Right. I mean, Harden was thinking about his numbers when it came to the math. I'm just saying it fit the play style more he wanted, though.
So here's where I am. I think James Harden, he made hunting fouls cool. Like, it was like, he had people were like, hey, that's a good strategy. Like, it's part of scoring. You know what I mean? So, like, I think that part of it was it's a strategy. It's a legit strategy. You get another team in foul trouble. You get to score efficiently. If you're over 80% from the line, you know, you. I think that – I just think the way to get there is when you play offense with the specific intent of getting fouled, not to score a basket, that is where I became a non-fan of James Harden. Like, it was so many – like, there was a period of time where he would go through games and he wasn't trying to score. He was specifically trying to get fouled. Yep. And I think that goes against the integrity of the sport. Is it effective? Absolutely. Is he one of the greatest isolation players in NBA history? Absolutely. But as a lot of people have mentioned, in the playoffs, A, you get better refs, B, the whistle tightens up, so it's not as effective, and then you get a lot of the flameouts that he ran into over his career. The turnover record, a lot of times went MIA. His last 9 elimination games, he's 1-8. The elimination game this past year, I think he was hurt. I throw him a little bell for that. Only taking 2 shots in the elimination game this past year. There's too many moments like that. But yes, he did change. He changed the game. King said it's a fair argument whether if it was for the better or not. I don't enjoy foul hunting. I think there are guys who get fouled, but they're trying to score. Like, they're not like, I'm playing this possession to score. Like, the driving,
where Zion, Giannis,
where he's hooking your arm as you're trying to guard him, I think that goes against the integrity of the game. It's a good strategy, absolutely. But I think, you know, Kings, Jordan, you've all alluded to this, there are like things that happen within the spirit of the game. And I think that type of stuff goes again. I hate to sound like that old man, you know, that's just not how they play the game. But, you know,
you're right.
I feel like, you know, when you do stuff like that, the grabbing the arms, the incessant, you know, flopping, throwing yourself around, I just think that goes against the integrity of the sport. Even though if it's very good strategy, because NBA reps are admittedly terrible, I'll say that on a night-to-night basis, that they miss a lot. So,
Jason, you and I we're the same age, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we were in the crosshairs of the basketball evolution, right?
That's fair, yeah.
That's a good one. The like 90s to the 2000s, where the game just kind of like went like this, right?
Yeah.
Our coaches growing up always told us, drive to the basket and at least try to get a bucket or get fouled, get to the foul line, right? Yeah. You know, and then now it's like, you're right, dude. Now it's like he's not even trying to drive to the basket to get a bucket. He's trying to get to the foul line, ultimately.
Yeah, I think that was that was the issue I took with Harden. You know, that's probably the one fan base on Twitter that I get into with the most, because I think they probably throw him in the Michael Jordan, Kobe, Dwayne Wade tier, that, you know, top of the tier shoot. I don't think he's there. I think that, and this is, and then people think it's not an insult to say that he's in a similar tier, like that Iverson, Drexler, like that's the second tier of shooting guards ever. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's not, I just don't think he's on that Wade, Kobe, you know. I think MJ's on his own tier, like, if I'm being real, but I don't think he's in that holy trinity of shooting guards, in my opinion. You know what I mean?
He's not even in Dwayne Wade's tier.
I don't think so. Like, that's the one that gets, like, y'all know, like, Dwayne Wade was like he had something to do with those championships. And he was an excellent defender.
You don't want to get into the shooting guard talk with me. I remember we had a conversation on Twitter with the Suns fans on Devin Booker, and we were going to all-time shooting guards. I think we listed like 20 of them before we got to Devin Booker. So, you know, I think a lot of people are just very prisoner of the moment in today's game.
Yeah.
The guys that came before and all the you know, all the things they accomplished as a shooting guards from the two spot, you know, I just think people have very short term memories and very aesthetic driven. You know, if a guy's doing it and doing it with a certain level of skill set, it's like, oh well, he's the best because he's doing it like this, and with no context for era, training, development, you know, rules, all that type of stuff. So
that's funny. That was the big thing, I think, when me and Jordan were in the late teens, early 20s. The LeBron Melo thing, like, Melo might have looked better, but LeBron was clearly the more effective scorer. So it's kind of how that went. Man, Yosef, thank you, my brother. This was awesome. Please tell the people where they can find you and what you got going on as far as your content.
No, yeah, I really appreciate y'all having me on. I honestly had a really good time. One of my more favorite podcasts that I've been on. You can find me on Twitter at Thunder Film Room. And then you can follow my work at Swish Theory, draft work. Going to start breaking down some more Thunder stuff. Been kind of taking the season off because it's been kind of hard. Thunder, I've liked running the Dad Boy Nice offense, so it's been a little more difficult than usual. But other than that, yeah, I really appreciate y'all having me on.
Nah, man, it's dope, man. It was actually King's idea, man. He wanted us to start branching out into other teams, man. So it's really from him. But yeah, this was great, bro. We gotta do this again sometime. Hopefully, we like when you know having these guys on early, and when the team gets really good, we have you back. You know what I mean? Yeah, right. Jordan, tell us what's going on with you, man.
Jordan Rules TSP on Twitter. Obviously, you can catch me Sundays, Tuesday, Wednesdays on Taproom Sports Podcast, 9:15 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, twitch.tv/taproomsportspodcast. If you are a degenerate, you definitely want to tap in because we got winners, baby. We've been winning, especially in football, baby. College football bowl season is here.
Yes, sir.
We've lost one so far. We are 4-1, gentlemen.
All right.
Money.
I know what it is. Me and Kings are here. Yes, you will not see me on a timeline during weekdays for my mental health. And I'm trying to defend the Darren.
Once this strike is over, I'm going to join you too. So you know, I ain't working right now, technically. So that's why I be here.
Yeah, it's all good. Again, we appreciate you guys tapping into the pod. Joseph, once again, thank you. Follow at RIP Kingsbrough. Follow myself, JJ Maples 55 _ MST. Subscribe. Follow the pod. Give us feedback. We are out of here. You guys be safe.
Let's go. Peace out. We'll be right back.